supposed to be the queen becomes a harlot. And this is the second section of this huge, huge parable of the story of the nation Israel in parabolic form. So we're going to read in Ezekiel 16, verses 15 to 34, where the text is going to pick up from last week, which was the history of Israel from their very beginning up to the reign of Solomon, which was the richest and wisest person that ever lived, and that country was more blessed than anybody has ever been on the face of this earth. But it changed. They changed. But thou didst trust in thy beauty and playedest the harlot because of thy renown and pouredest out thy whoredoms on everyone that passed by. His it was. And thou didst take of thy garments and madest for thee high places decked with divers colors and playedest the harlot upon them. The like things shall not come, neither shall it be so. Thou didst also take thy fair jewels of my gold and of my silver, which I had given thee, and madest for thee images of men, and didst play the harlot with them. And thou tookest thy broidered garments and coveredst them, and didst set mine oil and mine incense before them. My bread also, which I gave thee, fine flour and oil and honey, wherewith I fed thee, thou didst even set it before them for a sweet savor. And thus it was, saith the Lord Jehovah. Moreover, thou hast taken thy sons and thy daughters, whom thou hast born unto me, and these hast thou sacrificed unto them to be devoured. Were thy whoredoms a small matter that thou hast slain my children and delivered them up and causing them to pass through the fire unto them? And in all thine abominations and thy whoredoms, hast thou not remembered the days of thy youth when thou wast naked and bare and wast weltering in thy blood? So the queen at her peak becomes a harlot. The first verse is, but thou didst trust in thy beauty and playedest the harlot because of thy renown and pouredest out thy whoredoms on everyone that passed by. It was his, it was. Now this starts off with the level of blessings that they have. And he's referring to this as beauty. In other words, something attractive. They were supposed to be attractive, says Deuteronomy 4. They were supposed to be that way. God was blessing them so that the nations, and there's a crossroads, there are four continents where people would travel between Asia, Europe, Africa, and the Middle East. And people were traveling constantly through there. It's not happenstance that Israel is right there in that particular spot. The travelers would come by. They would see the wealth and the beauty and the magnificence of Israel during the time of Solomon. But what happened? They began to trust in their beauty and their wealth and their position as if they had done it. They became prideful. They did exactly what God did not want. God wanted to show the nations who he was through them. And as we go through the Mosaic Law, we can see that they were the only nation in the world that had these hygienic practices, these social practices, these dietary practices. This set them apart from the rest of the pagan cultures. So what happened? They trusted in themselves, in their beauty. Now, Israel had wealth and culture. And it's interesting. You can look at nations from the outside and say, wow, they got everything. Look at that. They got wealth and culture and beauty. But an outwardly brilliant society does not mean that there's a corrupt core. Because that's where the corruption starts, you see. It starts with morality inside the society, the Romans would never have been conquered by another army until they were weak internally. Same thing with this country. We have superior military capabilities. But you can see other nations are beginning to get those now that we've entered the nuclear age since 1945. We, as these other nations, are becoming internally corrupt. This was the case with these heathen nations. We are implementing civilized wickedness. Civilized wickedness, a term I apply to the low morality that comes into well-developed, prosperous, successful nations. It just means elaborate and creative wickedness. We in this country, as we know, and we have mentioned this, have implemented and rationalized killing the unborn people. Over 50 million of them now have perished since 1973 when the federal government, under the judicial branch, declared in their own way abortion is appropriate and can be done. And last year, we declared sexual deviancy the same way. You can only last so long in God's eye. You can only poke his eye for so long. You can see what happened in Egypt and Greece and Roman. The Romans were brought down for similar reasons. Licentiousness and an overpowerful autocrat that came in under the Caesars. You know, Rome had a whole series of different types of government. But the Caesars grabbed control. And you can see it today, what's happening here. You know, the executive thinks that he has complete control. And they talk that way, they don't, but when the other branches of government let them do what they want, they do have. It becomes the branch of government in our country that has the most influence. You know, the Jews knew that they had these blessings from God, and they were supposed to be a light to the surrounding nations, and they weren't. They began to see how prosperous they were, and they left God behind. They focused in on what they had, and it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough, and it never is. When you trust in yourself, you become narcissistic, and you begin to think that, I did this. It's pride. Narcissistic views of oneself emanates from pride. Solomon initiated alliances with heathen nations around him because he wanted to strengthen the kingdom. Now, some of this is not bad. You know, the very first truly imperialistic government was Rome because they had implemented imperialism and taken it to a new height. But Solomon had relationships with the nations around him similar to the imperialistic form of government that Rome created. And what he had done was he started with a marriage to Pharaoh's daughter. He took her to be his wife, and that forged a relationship with Egypt that he wanted. Now, I'm going to read the verse there in 1 Kings 3:1. This is right when he became king. There, he was going to be king, and then there was some political intrigue, and he had to have a successor, he had to have a competitor assassinated. And after that was done, then this is verse 1 in 1 Kings 3. And Solomon made a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David, until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord, and the wall of Jerusalem round about. Only the people sacrificed in high places because there was no house built unto the name of the Lord until those days. And we'll touch on the high places in a little bit. But Solomon started the downfall with these alliances. You know, I was trying to think of Solomon wrote most of the Proverbs except for the last one by Agur, and he must have written them earlier in his life with wisdom before he actually fell, because he got bad, and he got real bad. The downfall of his empire was in direct violation of the Mosaic law. God said, if you be, and I'm going to use some New Testament terms here, unequally yoked with these nations around you, God was going to kindle his anger, and that would be a trap or a snare for you, because they're going to lead you away from me, says God. They will lead you away from me. And once the nearby nations wanted the Jews and wanted to know how they were successful and why they had so much and why they were so powerful, the Jews then became even more prideful about it, because they had this adoration coming. And instead of letting people know about Jehovah God and how he had blessed them, they became like the nations around them. They went to what some call the lowest common denominator. They didn't bring those nations up to them in a knowledge of God. They said, we're going to go do what you guys do. It's exactly the reverse of what was supposed to happen. Exactly the reverse. The Jews surrendered themselves to the pagans because of the attention they were getting. Attention can be very, very, very deceitful and alluring. Very, very deceitful. Too much praise can really harm somebody if you're not discerning. Now look at what happened to Solomon here. I'm going to read from 1 Kings 11, verses 1 to 8. Now, King Solomon loved many foreign women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Edomites, the Sidonians, and the Hittites, of the nations concerning which Jehovah said unto the children of Israel, ye shall not go among them, neither shall they come among you. For surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love, and he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. And his wives turned away his heart. For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with Jehovah his God, as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went ever after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, and went not fully after Jehovah as did David his father. Then did Solomon build a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the mount that is before Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon. And so did he for all his foreign wives, who burn incense and sacrifice unto their gods. Well, not only did he make alliances with these people, he married them, and they turned him away. The New Testament tells us that bad company corrupts good morals. We don't associate, or, in New Testament terms, become unequally yoked together with unbelievers. You don't do it. They will drag you away. It always does. It doesn't go the other way. I've heard of girls dating men that were not believers. Well, I'll witness to him. I'll change him. No, you won't. He'll change you. Doesn't go that way. Never does. It's a myth. It's an absolute myth. Many of Israel's kings followed suit and did terrible, terrible things as a result of the relationships that they had with other nations. Now, I'm just going to list a few of them here. But there's a ton of them in the Bible. And the Old Testament just loaded with what these people did. They went to the nations around them instead of going to God. The God of the universe that had blessed this unique little nation beyond measure, given them God's oracles, the Bible, and promised the Messiah. That wasn't enough. They wanted to go to their neighbors and party down with them. And I have to tell you, this stuff all revolves around sex and drugs and some sort of a heightened experience of some sort. You can go back to the time of Moses and Aaron, when Moses is getting the law on Mount Sinai with God bringing that to him, and Aaron is down at the foot of the mountain, and they're melting the gold from the people's earrings and so on and making a golden calf and are worshiping it. They had an orgy. They were all dancing around naked having sex. And that's one of the big inducements into doing these things. Because you think about it, if I had this golden calf here, none of us are going to go over and bow down in front of this thing. We're going to look at anybody who does it. It's crazy. No, it's all associated with some sexual charge. Everything changes then when you get into that highly lustful situation. That's what brings people into this. You violate God's laws there, you're willing to violate them anywhere. It's real, real simple. So some of these examples are, Asa, for example, was one of the kings in Judah, and he's trusting the Syrians instead of God. A lot of these kings did this. Look what 2 Chronicles 16:7-9 says. And at that time, Hanani the seer came to Asa, king of Judah, and said unto him, because thou hast relied on the king of Syria and hast not relied on Jehovah God, therefore is the host of the king of Syria escaped out of thy hand. Were not the Ethiopians and the Lubim a huge host with chariots and horsemen, exceeding many? Yet because thou didst rely on Jehovah, he delivered them into thy hand. And that was a previous incident he's saying there. For the eyes of Jehovah run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect towards him. Herein thou hast done foolishly, for from henceforth thou shalt have wars. In other words, what God is saying was, through this prophet, Hanani, Asa, before you were trusting God and you were beating these guys, and now you're not. What happened? Therefore, because you've turned away from Jehovah to men to try and get your satisfaction, now you're going to have wars constantly throughout your entire reign. And he did. This is one of the worst ones. Ahab, one of the worst kings, marries the daughter of the Sidonians. Now, Sidon is where Lebanon is today. And the king of Sidon had a daughter. Her name was Jezebel. And she was a raging pagan. A raging pagan. She was terrible and very forceful in her idolatry. Not mildly idolatrous, but she was forceful. Now, the story, I'm just going to read a few verses here from 1 Kings 16. And it came to pass, as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Bethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him. And he reared up an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he had built in Samaria. And Ahab made the Asherah, and Ahab did yet more to provoke Jehovah, the God of Israel, to anger than all the kings of Israel that were before him. Unequally yoked, he marries a pagan woman, and she dragged him down. He had some redeeming qualities, but that finished him off. That just finished him off, marrying Jezebel. And then this last one here is when Amaziah worships the god of Seir. Now it came to pass after that Amaziah was come from the slaughter of the Edomites that he brought the gods of the children of Seir and set them up to be his gods and bowed down himself before them and burned incense unto them. Wherefore the anger of Jehovah was kindled against Amaziah, and he sent unto him a prophet who said unto him, why hast thou sought after the gods of the people which have not delivered unto their own people out of thy hand? In other words, these other gods can't do anything. Look at how bad they're living, and you want that? I do have one more example here. I'd forgotten about this one. Ahaz, he's going to bow to the Assyrians. And the net result of this particular king trying to make a league or get help from the Assyrians is what we have to pay attention to. You're going to see how this ends up. This is a gross error. So Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, saying, I am thy servant and thy son. Come up and save me out of the hand of the king of Assyria and out of the hand of the king of Israel, who rise up against me. Remember, this is after the split, the civil war. So you got Israel in the north with 10 regions, and you got Judah in the south. So Ahaz is in the south there. And he's afraid that Syria, which is farther north, is making a league with the king of Israel, and they're going to come against him. Well, he doesn't look to God. He looks over at another foreign pagan nation, the Assyrians. They're brutal guys. They're terrible. So Ahaz took the silver and gold that was found in the house of Jehovah and in the treasures of the king's house and sent it for a present to the king of Assyria. He's taking God's gifts to them and giving them to this pagan king. Here, help me out, help me out. They stopped trusting in God. They stopped trusting in God. So I'm going to move over to 2 Chronicles now, chapter 28. We're going to see what the results of this were. And Tiglath-Pileser, king of Syria, came unto him and distressed him, but strengthened him not, for Ahaz took away a portion out of the house of Jehovah and out of the house of the king and of the princes and gave it unto the king of Syria, but it helped him not. So the king of Syria walks away with all this gold and silver from the temple and says, thanks, but no thanks. I got your money and I'm gone. And you wonder, why do they keep doing this? Why do they keep doing this? Because they do. They keep doing it. The spiritual failure in this whole parable that God refers to has at least three levels. Three levels. The first one is this, we just looked at this political harlotry, which is turning to foreign governments for support and advice instead of God. That's what they were doing. Ignoring God completely and thinking, well, this guy over here, I'll make this political alliance and I'll have this and I'll have that. And ignoring God. We just read a passage where the eyes of God run to and fro throughout the entire world. He sees everything. There's nothing that escapes him. You can't fool God. It doesn't work that way. And there's the spiritual harlotry component of this, which comes about from in ancient Israel, from these political alliances with these pagan nations. They were unequally yoked and they started doing what they did. Spiritual harlotry is simply not worshiping God, but going after the pagan gods and goddesses. And we know from 1 Corinthians 10:20, this is worshiping demons. Idolatry is worshiping demons. That's what they're doing. Thinking that they're getting something better because of the sex and drug-charged environment that they're in. And they're having this great time, but all the time, Satan's just luring them in. Come on, come on, come on. You're so stupid, I can bring you right in. You got God. and you don't want them. I don't get it. Come on, man, I'll take you. I'm going to ruin you. I'm going to ruin you. That's exactly what happens. And then finally, this physical harlotry. It's defined as being unfaithful, like to one's spouse, having sex with strangers, and getting involved with all these sacred prostitution things that they had. And there's no love and justice and mercy here. It's just raw sex and a satisfaction of some unbelievable, ugly lust. So the text moves on here. The harlot is making high places. Now, I have to tell you that before I go into that, a high place was a place of worship, whether it was even used, for example, if you look at 1 Kings 3, that's why I read that second verse too, because Solomon hadn't built the temple yet, they weren't using the tabernacle, and they would put up altars on higher elevated places, and they were worshiping God there. But most of the time, the text in the Old Testament is referring to setting up on a higher plane to elevate it in the mind of the worshiper, a pagan deity. That's what they were doing, and that's what we're going to look at here now. And verse 16 says, "And thou didst take of thy garments and madest for thee high places, decked with diverse colors, and platest the harlot upon them. The like thing shall not come, neither shall it be so." So sometimes these high places were just raised altars in valleys, but it was an attempt to make whatever they were worshiping higher than themselves, to have a view of looking up, to give it an elevated, more majestic sense, so that you were worshiping something bigger or above you. And most of these were dedicated to idol worship. We can see that in Numbers 33, 52 and Leviticus 26, 30. The Moabites were the worst offenders. And Isaiah tells us that in his 16th chapter. He goes into some detail about how bad the Moabites were. And these shrines that they would put up here would have these sacred objects. So they said like a stone pillar, a wooden pole. Usually they were in the shape of a phallus, a sexual symbol, because it was a sexed and drug-charged environment that got them to do this stuff. And a lot of these things identified with animals and stars and planets and goddesses and any female deities. If you remember back a few chapters, the leaders in the temple were defecating towards the temple and bowing towards the sun. They were worshiping inanimate objects. That's what they're doing here. Now, the verse in this that we just read in 16, it implies that they adorned these things with these many colored tapestries. They would take these symbols and they were dressing them up with the prettiest stuff that they have. You know, dressing something up and making it look better is something that you're giving attention to. You know, you want your yard to look nice, or you want your house to look nice, or whatever. You want to clean your car, you want it to look nice. You're dressing it, or you're dressing yourself for an occasion of some sort or another, a wedding or a funeral or whatever it is. That's what they were doing. They were dressing up these high places, these phallic symbols, if you will, with multicolored tapestries, sort of like a Persian rug or something. I mean, these were expensive things that they were doing here. The text is showing us that God says, "You." Am I back on? Oh, okay. You'd completely give. You've completely given yourself over to these things. You're even decorating them and ornamenting them, showing the amount of favor you're giving them and tension. Look what Proverbs 7:16 says. I have spread my couch with carpets of tapestry, with striped cloths of the yarn of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. This is what the harlot woman does in the Proverbs to make her house more attractive to the men that are coming in there to have sex with her. She wants it to be more enticing. That's what they're doing. God says, you're doing this with these pagan deities here. They're nothing. They're wood and stone, and you're all charged up with sex and drugs. And this is in place of me? This is in place of me? So this verse that we just read, 16 here, closes with essentially saying that this is something that should not be done. It's not proper. It should not come to be in this manner that you do these things. Now, as we move on, this next section shows us that God's gifts are given over to the idols. God's gifts are given over to the idol. Just like the king gives away the gold in the temple. Ezekiel's saying, God is saying through Ezekiel, you did the same thing. Thou didst also take thy fair jewels of my gold and of my silver, which I had given thee, and madest for the images of men, and didst play the harlot with them. And thou tookest thy broidered garments and coveredst them, and didst set mine oil and mine incense before them. My bread also, which I gave thee, fine flour and oil and honey, wherewith I fed thee. And thou didst even set it before them for a sweet savor. And thus it was, saith the Lord Jehovah. We have to look at these Jewish people here having an unnatural, raging sexual lust that they're trying to satisfy. And I can tell you, lust in anything it's applied to never produces satisfaction, ever. It produces more lust. When it's applied to sexual activity, you never are satisfied. When it's pride, when it's applied to a wholesome profit motive in an enterprise, you never get enough. And it's not that you need to earn more to keep going. It's you just can't get enough. You want more and more and more, and you're never satisfied. It's the same thing with power. You never get enough. You can become president of the world. It's not enough. It's not enough. Isaiah mentions this auto-erotic, if you will, activity with these cast metal phallic objects in his 57th chapter. And Ezekiel, who gives particular attention to the sexual attraction that he emphasizes with, shows us that they were making out of the gold and silver in the temple with jewels phallic symbols. And they were using them. They were using them. And then they were embroidering clothes and they were covering these phallic symbols with these newly designed embroidered cloths. This was a practice, actually, that had been known in ancient Egypt and Mesopotamia. And 2 Kings 23:7 basically says, well, we're just kind of doing what everybody else does. We're doing what everybody else does. When you're set apart by God and you have the best that there is, they were looking at this and saying, it's not enough. We want what they have. We want what they have. They were jealous. They were living for the flesh instead of for God. They weren't living with what he had given them, which was better than anybody around them. They actually took everything that God had given them, all the fine food and the produce, because they had so many agricultural practices that God gave them to produce plenty. and they were offering it up to these non-gods. So they were giving the things that God had given them to these idols that are basically just a representation of the demons. A representation of the demons. Let's do it because everybody else is. Oh, my goodness. And then, to top it all off, they were killing their children. Moreover, thou hast taken thy sons and thy daughters, whom thou hast born unto me, and these hast thou sacrificed unto them to be devoured. Were thy whoredoms a small matter, that thou hast slain my children and delivered them up and causing them to pass through the fire? And this is the worst part of it, that they were sacrificing their babies and their young people. Some of them were young people. Some of them they would do a ritual killing and then burning them, and some of them they would just throw them into these big heated up ovens and kill them. And that's how deranged people get in following this stuff. The practice came gradually to the nation Israel, but by Ezekiel's time, this was a full-blown practice. It was practiced openly in Jerusalem. In other words, God is saying here, you know, your actions were heartbreaking enough, but do you have to include my children too? Did you have to do that? Look at our country. Look what we're doing. I got to applaud the people that stand up against this and try and push back, because it's a losing battle. So many people have accepted this as just what we do. Yeah, we don't like it maybe, but yeah, that's what we do. And the biggest group, the Planned Parenthood group, says that they're not really children, but then they go sell the body parts as human body parts. It's crazy where we're going. All children are God's. All children are God's. They all belong to him. And I'm going to close with this section here of how soon they forgot. And God says, and in all thine abominations and thy whoredoms, thou hast not remembered the days of thy youth, when thou wast naked and bare and was weltering in thy blood. And if we think back to the beginning of this parable that we just started in our last session, God is saying, you were an infant that was born and neglected. You were an orphan at infancy, and you were laying there in your placenta and blood, and I rescued you. And you've forgotten this. You've forgotten it. You forgot what I did. I picked you out of the world's population and demonstrated through you what I can do if people will only turn to me in love and obedience. He was kind to them in Egypt. He took them out when it got bad. He knew what they were going to do. He knew what they were going to do. And he was kind to them anyway. You know, the Bible teaches us that Jesus died for us when we were still sinners. He didn't wait for us to get perfected. He died and sacrificed himself for us while we were sinners. God knew what the Jews were going to do, and he brought them through all of these issues. And he gave them something that they couldn't get themselves. And what did they do? They just went into spiritual adultery. And that is what is going to characterize the end of this age too. The Messiah has been here offering his salvation. And the apostasy that happened in ancient Israel is going to pale in comparison to what's going to happen, or what is happening now. With all the big groups here, and even the community churches are falling into this new evangelicalism junk. It's moving away from God, moving away from God. The final culminating event of the apostasy in this last age is going to be the rise of one great world leader that we refer to euphemistically as the Antichrist. The man of sin, this one world leader. And he will demand worship of him throughout the entire world. And you can see the seeds of that today in the ultra, ultra pride that comes with some of the national leaders. I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of Mussolini. Oh, my goodness. You can see the level of pride coming from him, and you just think, oh, my goodness. And the old proverb, but pride goeth before a fall, was true for him. And it's going to be true for the Antichrist, too. But he is coming, and it's the worst of the apostasy that's ever happened. Israel is a microcosm of what's going to happen. The coming judgment will be greater than what the Jews suffered. Let's pray.